Well, Steve, I'd like to see how well you can analyze a picture after you've had like 8 martinis in the past 2 hours.
I don't know, bro. I get better. No, I'm just kidding. Wait, you know what you hate? Those fucking people that are like, I do my art better when I'm slam drunk. No, you don't.
I can actually drive better when I'm drunk.
Oh, my God. Fucking high school. So many people said that. Dude, I just feel so much more relaxed. I'm not as jumpy, you know? Yeah. Like, for me, it's no big
deal.
I don't even have to use my turn signals. The lights just become suggestions, you know?
Yeah.
Because I'm such a good driver, everybody around me knows that I'm about to turn.
Welcome back to the Trilateral Troika. This is Steve, along with the other Steve.
Feeling hot over here. A little hot today.
And Brian.
Nice, cold, refreshing Shasta to pour one out for FSU's bowl hopes.
Did you really get Shasta? Where'd you get it? Cumberland Farms. Oh, oh, oh.
Yeah, let me get he just found it at a pack of mom.
I'm at a bodega, and then he's going to get violently ill.
He expired in 1994.
1987. I had those left over. Really... Those were left over from the quince from my sister. She's 47.
The bodega was really worried that you'd realize the cash register was just a drawer.
Bro, let me tell you something. When I worked at the farmer's market, the freaking cash register was just a drawer, bro. It was literally just a wooden drawer. Yeah. You had to do all the shit in your head. There was no calculator. You had to do all of it just sitting there.
God forbid you fucked it up.
I was like, but the thing is, dude, I was like 15. You know, you're trusting me with a lot of stuff there. You know, we do like a couple $1,000 a day.
It's a big responsibility for a 15-year-old.
I know, man. That's why I quit. I quit.
That's why the kids, they don't got that work ethic anymore.
I quit.
They've got Stripe and Square. And
I quit when I, what's it called? My boss was like pregnant and she was just being a bitch. You know, I'm 15. I'm like, I'm not putting up with that shit. I don't need this fucking job. I'm just here because
I need this.
Guess what? You pay me money and I do things with corn and it doesn't involve sex. So this is much easier than any other job. So that's why I took this job. Okay. You don't get to be a bitch to me because you're pregnant. Fucking, there's no excuse for being a bitch to anyone. Fuck off. I want to hear it. So then I walked off the job site. I didn't even get my last check. Actually, my brother brought me my last check, which was all under the table, by the way. And I'm walking home, and my mom is driving by, and she pulls over, and she's like, what the fuck are you doing? Because I was just walking home. So I got a ride, too, and an extra cigarette.
That's awesome.
Oh, that was great.
Everything was coming up Steve that day.
What are you talking about? I lost my fucking job. I lost my job because I couldn't put up with some dumb bitch who I have no control over at all, no power, no influence over. Because I'm a dumbass kid that doesn't realize that. Anyway.
Speaking of dumb bitches, there's a really good show on Netflix that covered James A. Garfield. Especially after like we
Steve
just
told
it.
Me about
like,
that. Pretty cool. Yeah, I good thing you said something because I forgot. But Steve told me about that. I gotta add that.
I need to watch it.
Yeah,
I watched a little bit of it. It was pretty good.
I chose to watch the latest season of Pen 15 or Stranger Things, as it's called on Netflix. But these like adults, these adult actors that are playing like kids that are like 7 years younger than they are.
Ugh, mm-hmm. Dude.
I think even more than that.
Maybe. I'm not sure. I've heard it's okay. Some people I know are big fans. They said it was really good, and then I saw a review said it was bad. And then I heard that there's four. I said, by the way, I stopped at season 3. But I've heard there's 4 endings, and it's completely random which one you get based on your account.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'm so glad I never even started watching that shit.
Dude, it was actually a good show. Like, the first season or two was good. And then, even towards the end of the second season, I was like, what the fuck are we doing? Like, the show lost all direction for me, personally.
If, if the ending of a show is completely random based on my account and I have no access to see like all of them or no choice to see all of them, go find yourself.
I don't know if you have a choice or not. I think you
I don't
might.
Think that's true.
Just read it on Twitter. How could it be fake?
Do you mean X everything now?
I'm not familiar with X. What is that? What is X? It's
fucking Twitter. The bird app.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they're probably gonna just I think that's definitely not. If they did that, like people would, considering the fact that each of the like the final episodes are each like movies themselves.
Oh god, yeah,
two the last four episodes. Long.
2.5
Really? Yeah. Episode's like 2.5 hours long.
What?
Yeah, the final episode's gonna be like a feature length movie.
Wow. Yeah, I mean I'm here for the idea of that show, but like I feel like it fell off for me. I definitely probably pick it back up. It's one of those shows where I'll pick it back up at some point, definitely. But yeah. Not in a fucking hurry.
But speaking of things that fell off.
In Russia, during Chernobyl, my penis, it fell off. And penis is Russian for...
dick.
Well, well, today, boys, we're going to be talking about a lost Japanese treasure.
Uh-oh.
This is generally a lost treasure that's associated with the Philippines that comes to be known as Yamashita's gold.
Yamashita's gold?
Yes. Named after General Tomoyuki Yamashita, who was the who was sort of like
I think
the
it's general Yamashita, who was isn't it? Right.
Yamashita?
Yeah, I think it is. Yamashita. I think it is. Well, maybe it is Yamashita. I don't know.
Listen, the only gold, right, in the Philippines is lumpia. Oh my god. The Filipino nurses
you got some lumpia.
It is over, dog.
Yeah. Stick your face so in that and pass out.
Oh.
Lumpia.
That shit is so fucking unreal. Just with a little. Oh my god! It's so
look, if you're gonna, if you're failing at the University of Oklahoma, you should just submit some lumpia for extra credit. Why you gotta make a big political thing out of it?
Nobody can resist that.
Well, they don't. They don't practice witchcraft. They don't. They don't trap with demonic cultures. which is what they called non-Christian people, by the way. That was like one of the things that got brought up in the professor's very, very like well written and thoughtful like comment on like why they didn't get a grade or whatever.
Oh yeah. Oh, it was amazing. The whole thing's fucking complete hogwash and it's ridiculous.
Ridiculous and hilarious.
It is Yamashita. It's just all those years of on, like the History Channel and like In Search Of. They're just like Leonard Nimoy talking about Yamashita's gold.
I was learning Japanese for a couple years there, but I always thought it was like that's how you said that word. I don't know why. It's been a long time since I did it. I think you know way more Japanese than me now.
So it's not Yamashita.
Yeah. But you know, it doesn't really matter too. Like I guess at the end of the day I'm being pedantic, you know.
It's Yamashita.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
Close enough, Gaijin-san.
You got it.
Yes, he was like the guy who conquered Malaysia. And he was assigned to defend the Philippines from the Americans when they went to retake it.
And spoiler alert, how'd that end up?
I mean, I mean, homeboy got hung. So,
Jesus Christ. Okay.
Whoops.
So one of the origins of this is that there were sort of legends around this Japanese ship called the Awamaru. Mm-hmm. It was a Mitsubishi constructed ship that was made in Nagasaki, The keel was laid down on July 10th, 1941, and it was launched on August 24th, 1942.
Look.
And she was completed on March 5th, 1943.
I'm just saying, there's your first problem. Everybody knows, you know, we all know growing up, Mitsubishi, it's a girl ship, okay?
Mitsubishi makes televisions.
It's a girl ship, okay? You don't drive, you don't walk around in it, you don't drive that car, okay? Mitsubishi Eclipse, girl car, Mitsubishi ship, girl ship, okay?
It's okay, like, but the ship, was it the turbo version or was it the non-aspirated version?
It had a stomach.
They did not go with the hatchback sports package.
Was it a manual or automatic? That makes a lot of difference.
It was a manumatic.
It was a manual.
Yeah, manumatic.
It was 1943. I think an automatic was having your like servant change the gears for you.
Yeah. Jeeves, second gear, please.
You have some small man down moving the clutch, and you like kick him in the ribs every time.
Imagine showing them a Bugatti Veyron; their fucking heads would explode.
Oh hell yeah!
The Awamaru was requisitioned and refitted for auxiliary use by the Imperial Japanese Navy during the war on March 26, 1943. The ship left Japan carrying 3,000 tons of ammunition for Singapore. It traveled to Singapore with convoy HI-3 in July of 1943 and returned to Japan with convoy HI-14 in November. She again traveled to Singapore with convoy HI-41 in February of 1944 and returned to Japan with convoy HI-48 in March. She then transported troops to Burma with convoy HI-63 in May and returned to Japan with convoy HI-66 in June. The Awamaru was attached to convoy HI-71 carrying Operation Sho reinforcements for the Philippines. The convoy sailed into the South China Sea from Mako Naval Base in the Pescadores on August 17th and was discovered that evening by the USS Redfish. Redfish assembled other American submarines, USS Rasher, Bluefish, and Spadefish, for a radar-assisted Wolfpack attack in typhoon conditions on the night of August 18th through the 19th. Awamaru was one of the several ships torpedoed that night, but beached at Port Coromel to avoid sinking and was towed to Manila on August 21st. The Awamaru was repaired in Singapore and returned to Japan with convoy HI-84, in January of 1945.
Singaporeans, they do a good job there, you know. Fix her right up.
In 1945, the Awamaru
was employed. No spit, no like little things of gum on the ship, you know, because you get torched and set on fire for that shit over there, so.
Yeah, you know, today they just cane you, but back then they would like shoot you out of a cannon.
Yeah, like at the time, the prime minister of Singapore, he had a comedic sense, you know. That should be someone's punishment, you know. Just fire it out of a cannon. If you live, then it's divine intervention, right? If we're gonna have the death penalty, God's we will. Should have random ass shit, you know.
I call it God's plan.
Yeah, God's plan, exactly. You set up 20 buttons and you have all the guards press them all at once so that you can't like pin the cannon shot on any one guard, and you just shoot them into a fucking rocky outcropping, you know.
You know, with the U.S. that apparently when they do firing squad, that all the bullets are real.
Yeah. Yeah. I've heard that, but I don't know, man. I feel like the other way is better. Only one of them's loaded.
I was listening to an interview with a lawyer from South Carolina. I think it was South Carolina. He was talking about Pee Wee Gaskins.
There's your first one. How, there's no real people God. In South Carolina.
What did this lawyer say about Pee Wee Gaskins?
Well, he was the prosecutor against him, and they were talking about that it was like he stopped essentially being a prosecutor because he didn't want to a state prosecutor because he didn't want to carry out the death penalty anymore.
Agree with him. I agree.
And he said that one of the cases that they found that all the bullets except for one had been accounted for that had hit one of the guys that they executed by firing squad, but the reason why the other bullet was accounted for, they found out, was because they all hit essentially the same place and just passed through him.
Jesus. Wow,
that's crazy. I don't know. That sounds kind of like gun culture, like story, you know? All these guys are expert marksmen. They all shot within the same millimeter zone. They were
You have to like pass a test. They don't just let Dale Gribble be the executioner.
Yeah, it's like the test Trump took, like draw an elephant, you know, things like that.
Yeah, he drew the clock like a champ. Here's your rifle.
Where's 6 and 12 going? Nobody's drawn a clock better than me, folks.
In 1945, the Awamaru was employed as a Red Cross relief ship, reportedly carrying vital supplies to American and Allied prisoners of war in Japanese custody. Under the relief of POW's agreement, she was supposed to be given safe passage by Allied forces, and Allied commanders issued orders to that effect.
Who's she?
The boat.
The Awamaru.
I'm fucking kidding you guys. Jeez. God damn. It's like hanging around with a bunch of fucking salty ass sailors over here.
Having delivered her supplies, Awamaru took on several hundred stranded merchant marine officers, military personnel, diplomats, and civilians in Singapore. Although there were rumors and stories that the ship carried treasure worth approximately $5 billion, 40 tons of gold.
$5 billion today or $5 billion then?
$5 billion today.
Wow.
Okay.
40 tons of gold, 12 tons of platinum, valued at about $58 million, and 150,000 carats of diamonds and other strategic materials.
Wow.
More credible and less exciting sources identify the likely cargo as being nickel and rubber.
I got a lot of that in my house. Could I start a thing? You know, sell some metal?
I mean, it's a federal offense, but help yourself. Because apparently nickel's worth more than the actual like currency at the moment, like the amount of metal that's in a nickel. So that if you could destroy it and you could make a profit, but it's also a federal offense. So
So don't go try to melt your nickel down in your backyard.
Yeah. what are you doing back there, Uncle Ryan? Furnace. Yeah, melting nickels. You know the government's got nothing on me.
Theoretically, you could build a smelter in your backyard and hot enough to melt.
One of our friends is definitely a blacksmith, and I've definitely made a fucking knife with him before. It's like crazy how much shit you can melt in there.
Mm-hmm.
The ship was observed in Singapore being loaded with a cargo of rice and sacks. However, the docks were...
You know, you have a staple food and an activity. Oh, sacks. Okay. Sacks. Got it. I thought you said sacks.
However, that evening, the docks were reportedly cleared, and troops were brought in to first unload the rice and then reload it with the alleged contraband, is sort of how the story goes. Her voyage also corresponded with the last possible location of the fossil remains of the Peking Man, which were in Singapore at the time and were on their own priceless in value.
What about the Peking Duck? That is the most delicious food, I swear to God.
The most succulent.
Oh.
A succulent Chinese meal.
Mm. Mm. This is Democracy Manifest.
Ladies and gentlemen,
and it's touching my penis.
Is Democracy Manifest. You know your judo well.
I just love the fact that he was just a guy that would just like dine and ditch in Lake Sydney.
Yeah.
He was a notorious like dine and ditch guy.
He wasn't like a big villain or anything. He was just a douche, that's all. I saw it. There was an interview with him before he died. It was pretty interesting.
There are various theories regarding the disappearance of several Peking Man fossils during the war. One such theory is that the bones sank with the Awamaru in April of 1945. The ship departed Singapore on March 28th, and on April 1st was intercepted late at night in the Taiwan Strait by the American submarine USS Queenfish, which mistook her for a destroyer. The Awamaru had been guaranteed safe passage as a relief ship carrying Red Cross supplies to prisoner of war camps. Under the agreed rules, she disclosed to the Allies the route she would take back to Japan. Her original route was promulgated through a minefield, an apparent ruse to draw attackers into the mined area. The area was known to be mined and would have been avoided at any rate. Her final route avoided the mines.
Wait, so go through that again? Like, the way that boat was supposed to go was through a minefield?
Well, the Japanese, as part of the agreement, they said, all right, this ship is going this, like, it's taking this path. But the path it took would have taken it through a minefield. So the idea was that they would lure in enemy ships into the minefield.
Got you, but the ship itself,
the ship itself wasn't going that route.
It just said that it was going that way.
Yeah.
Ah, okay. Never let them know your next move.
this gambit did not pay off for them because the torpedoes of the Queenfish would sink the Awamaru. Only one of the 2004 passengers and crew, Kantora Shimoda, survived. He was the captain's personal steward, and it was the third instance of him being the sole survivor of a torpedoed ship. He had been on a ship in 43 and another one in 44 that had met similar fates, being transport and cargo ships that had been sunk by Allied torpedoes.
Okay, so is this a case of the submarine sinking the Awamaru because the Awamaru was not where it was supposed to be?
Yeah, it was essentially not where it was supposed to be. They mistook it for a destroyer, and they're like, oh, good, we're eating good today, boys. And then they just, you know, shot them up.
Got you. Okay.
Light them up.
So in the end, it's not the fault of the submarine. It's the fault of them having that boat where it was not supposed to be.
We'll get to that. This is sort of relevant to what we were talking about before we started the podcast in terms of culpability in war crimes.
Okay.
What should we do with the survivors of the wreck that are clearly unable to defend themselves? Kill them.
Shoot them.
And then that fucking goddamn vulture, Megyn Kelly, said that she would, she prefers that they did that.
Listen, man.
That if it were up to her, they'd drag her out of the boat. They drag them out of the boat and, like, torture them.
Look, man, I know things are bleak, but just know one day, eventually, one day, motherfuckers are going to go to prison.
Oh, yeah. There's no way, dude. There's just no way. Not the stuff going on right now.
Or no, they're going to get Ceausescu'd, okay?
Oh, Ceausescu,
shit.
Yeah.
Shit sucks right now. It's bleak. These people are fucking goblins. They're not. They're like, they're monsters. I don't even give them the credit of being human. I don't give them any of that. The only thing that drives me every single day is hatred for them and knowing that I will outlive them.
Well, that and I'm going to, like,
see them die one day.
The so delicious nooks and crannies of a freshly baked English muffin, you know?
Oh my God, with the butter and the jelly.
Isn't it good? Oh, fuck. So good. Anyway. All right, so back to the
$15 trillion in treasure at the bottom of the Strait of Taiwan. Go ahead.
Oh, shit. This guy was paying attention.
the commanding officer of the Queenfish, Commander Charles Elliott Laughlin, was ordered by Admiral Ernest King to an immediate general court-martial. As the Awamaru sank, she was carrying a cargo of rubber, lead, tin, and sugar. 1,700 merchant seamen and 80 first-class passengers, all survivors of ship sinkings, were being transported from Singapore to Japan. The survivors said no Red Cross supplies were aboard, they having been previously unloaded.
That's so fucked up. All survivors of ship sinkings. Imagine that, bro. You survived your fucking boat getting torpedoed. You're like on land and they're like, all right, listen, we're bringing this Red Cross ship for you, and we're gonna get you fuck out of here, get you back to where you need to be, okay? Hop on this ship. Yeah, you've been guaranteed safe passage. You got this big stupid fucking Red Cross on the side of it. Everybody knows, like, we are a peaceful ship. Boom. Just in the middle of the fucking water. Holy shit. Can you, and then who was it? It was like the third time that he was like the sole survivor of a fucking torpedo attack. What?
You know what'd be even crazier? Like, imagine you're watching this. Imagine you're watching like Deadliest Catch, and like the Northwestern just gets blown out of the fucking water. And then they zoom in on the cameras and they're just SIGs down there. And he's just like, you know, he's like, oh, we're going to be all right. We got our safety suits on. And then they just shoot everybody that's in the water with fucking rockets.
Insane.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like the guy that survived both atomic bombings.
Oh, yeah. Dude, there are a couple people like
that. Oh, yeah. Like, he, like, drove over to, yeah. He's like, I got to get the fuck out of here. I got to go to the other area.
He was in Hiroshima, and he went by train to Nagasaki.
Yeah. Hard over here. Nagasaki, not going to get me out of this area of Japan. I'm going to go over here.
Commander Laughlin was found guilty of negligence, and the U.S. government offered via Switzerland to replace the Aomura with a similar ship.
Steve, hot topic. What's your opinion on the second bomb, the Nagasaki bomb?
It's complex in a lot of ways because Japan didn't respond after the first one.
Right.
And
Truman didn't even order the second one. The Navy did.
Yeah, it was the military. The military had full control at that point. And then also the fact that the only like peace plan that Japan had previously offered was essentially like a white peace for them. Right. It was they get to keep like all of their colonial possessions. They get to keep Korea.
Yeah,
they get to keep essentially like the empire intact, and it's like that's not really an acceptable endgame at this point.
No, so you're saying we had to be Pacino, right? In the Godfather 2, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. I got my answer for you now, Senator. Nothing. Not even the fees.
I mean,
for the
licenses,
which I would hope you would put up yourself.
There's a lot there because there's questions like, well, some people claim like, oh, where they were about to surrender, and it's like we don't know they're about to surrender. They're not talking to you.
Yeah, that's true.
Like you can't. I can see why they made the decision. It's not a decision I would want to make.
No,
but I can understand why it was undertaken. I don't think it was just like complete like.
I don't think it was like, done out of malice or anything. There's a lot of people out there who think that it was done for like. Out of some like lunacy or something like that to test the bomb to prove things to Russia, and I'm sure that came into the equation, but like that wasn't the reason they dropped it. Not the only reason. It's very interesting. Anyway, sorry. Quick aside. Back to the treasure.
On the very day of Japan's surrender, August 14, 1945. Foreign Minister Togo forwarded a message to the United States through Bern, Switzerland, demanding payment. Of 196,115,000 yen, about $45 million for the loss of the 2,003 lives, and 30,370,000 yen, 7.25 million dollars for the goods aboard the Aomaru, and various other claims for a total demand of 227,286,600 yen. Or approximately 52.5 million. No gold bullion is mentioned in this message.
Okay, why?
Interesting. Yeah. So if you think that they're carrying treasure like that, that would absolutely be like, yo, you owe us also like, you know, $685 million over here for the silverware that we had on board that is unrecoverable. You also owe us, $346 billion over here for tablecloths that were lost at sea. Like, there would be some kind of numbers fuckery that makes me think that there's probably not all that gold on that boat.
Mm.
Yeah, they were like, all right, so there was the Rembrandts and the...
How many Rembrandts were there? 6 or 7?
Oh, Jesus fucking Christ. Don't even... No. Take that back right now. Don't start.
And there were 5 Countaches.
5 Countaches. Is a Lamborghini.
This bill was never paid, and in 1949, the matter was closed.
That's fucking awesome. We looked at him like, get it in blood. Fuck you, we ain't paying you.
Mm-hmm.
The United States is such pieces of shit.
Well, they did rebuild the country, so.
I mean, that's the very least they could do.
1980,
they needed that scientific research.
the People's Republic of China launched a salvage effort to recover the ship. They had successfully located and identified the wreck site in 1977, and were convinced that the vessel was carrying billions in gold and jewels. After approximately 5 years and $100 billion spent on the effort, the search was finally called off. No treasure was found. However, several personal artifacts were returned to Japan.
Also, like, the Taiwan Strait can only be so deep, right?
It's like 30 feet.
They know where the boat, like, they know where the boat is, right? So, like, I feel like if it was $5 billion in treasure, they would absolutely get it the fuck up.
You'd be surprised how expensive those things are. Because what was the thing that they were looking for? There was some big, like, Spanish galleon gold thing. It was off the coast of Florida, I think.
Yeah. Oh, I forget what ship it is, but it's like the 1715 thing. And like,
yeah, it was a bunch of ships off.
It was massive, but it was massive, and they did find it, and then they ended up having to give a lot of it back to Spain.
Yeah,
legally, money.
Yeah, you have to give it back to Spain.
I understand that. I get that. My point is, you're probably spent like hundreds of thousands of dollars to get this gold back, and then you just got to give it back. Right. So if they don't know where it is now and they were going to keep it and not have to pay anything because it's their gold, yeah, maybe it is worth it, but it's probably really expensive to find it.
Well, they wouldn't have to give it back to Japan because it's probably all stolen.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah, I was thinking the Japanese would be looking for it, you know?
Like spoils of war.
Yeah. Why not?
Wait, I think it's the fact. Well, the one guy that survived, and he wasn't like trying to get together a bunch of people to like go get it.
Let's go get it. I got a mess
up the A-team. It's kind of like Nazi gold. If you find Nazi gold, you don't have to give it back to Germany. Like that's kind of yours now. You need to do with it what you will. But like,
get that shit melted, brother.
And it's probably made in bar form from fuck melted down fuck fucking stolen jewelry and probably
teeth. Nothing belongs to anybody.
Yeah,
just dead bodies, bro. That's my gold.
In the aftermath of the salvage attempt that the Chinese made, the NSA scoured thousands of intercepted communications to determine what exactly happened to the treasure. From the communications, they determined that the treasure was not to be taken back to Japan. It was to be sent from Japan to Singapore, where it would then be delivered to Thailand. The gold was successfully delivered, and the Awamaru was reloaded with a cargo of tin and rubber for the return trip to Japan.
Ah, so it was in Thailand.
Oh, so it was never even on the boat. Okay, okay. The mystery deepens. We're going to figure this one out. I feel like the Hardy Boys.
Just like we figured out the Tom-Mom Shoot case.
listen. Do you remember the guy that had a bunch of money and, like, hid his shit like out in Yellowstone National Park or like somewhere out there
a couple of years ago, right? Up
the whole, well, I mean, it was like a decade ago where he was like made up like this whole like riddle.
Ryan, I hope you understand that shit. A couple of years ago to me is like 2010.
Yeah, it was easily like 2013, 2014 when it all went down.
Yeah, I remember
somebody
that.
Somebody found it. Like, he was legit. Somebody actually found it. And I forget how much money it was worth, but yeah, like they actually found his box of shit that he hid.
It was like those like picture books where you had to like determine the puzzle and like find out where he buried the jewels or whatever.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
All right, so the gold is actually
in Thailand. Thailand. So it's the gold's currently controlled by Sagat.
It's in Bangkok. And then you just start playing more ads chess. In December of 1969, rumors spread that gold bars had been found in the mountains about 40 kilometers from Manila. And this caused a craze that would later on be sort of elaborated on, that sort of passes through urban legend and other treasure hunters. But the most notable works that have talked about it are these books by a man and his wife named Sterling and Peggy Seagrave, who wrote two books related to this, the Yamato Dynasty, The Secret History of Japan's Imperial Family, which came out in 2000, and Gold Warriors, America's Secret Recovery of Yamashita's Gold in 2003. The Seagraves contend that looting, including more than 6,000 tons of gold, was organized on a massive scale by both Yakuza gangsters, such as Yoshio Kodama, and the highest levels of Japanese society, including Emperor Hirohito.
Oh man, it goes all the way to the top.
The Japanese government intended that the loot from Southeast Asia would finance Japan's war effort. It's alleged by the Seagraves that, that Hirohito appointed his brother, Prince Yasuhito Chichibu, to head a secret organization named Kin no Yori, or the Golden Lily, after a poem that the emperor had written. It was reported that many of those who knew the location of the loot were killed during the war, and later tried by the Allies for war crimes and executed or incarcerated. Yasuhito is also like a massive like war criminal himself, who essentially got out of any sort of prosecution due to being like the prince.
I feel like every single person, even tangentially involved with World War II, was a war criminal in some form or fashion.
In some
like,
way.
Everybody. It's crazy. Probably. Like you see movies like Saving Private Ryan, and it's like you could just like count war crimes that go on in there, but like never get addressed. It's just kind of like, oh, that guy just shot a guy with his hands up. All right, that's cool. Like, what the fuck did I just see?
Yamashita himself was convicted of war crimes and executed by the United States Army on February 23rd, 1946. In Los Banos, Laguna, in the Philippines.
Executed in the bathroom? You said the Los Banos?
Banos. B-A-N accent mark over the N-O-S.
Oh my god. He was executed in the bathroom.
Died like Gigi in the Sopranos on toilet.
In Los Banos.
According to the Seagraves, numerous Golden Lily vaults were found by Edward Lansdale and Severino Garcia Diaz Santa Romana in caves north of Manila in the high valleys, and the M Fund, which was named after Major General William Marquardt, was established from Santa Romana and Lansdale's work.
Look, Lansdale sounds like the name of someone who gets in trouble a lot. Lansdale!
Ah, cheese it. This was alleged that Santa Romano tortured Yamashita's driver, Major Kojima Kashi, to obtain the probable locations of the loot.
Kojima.
The Seagraves wrote that the Lansdales flew to Tokyo and briefed MacArthur and his chief of intelligence, Charles Willoughby, and later flew to the United States to brief Clark Clifford, and returned with Robert Anderson to inspect several caves in the Philippines with MacArthur.
Hmm. You think there's a Clark Clifford?
Probably.
Yeah. Or Cliff Clark.
You know, real Silver Age Superman names.
Yeah. Cliff Clark and Bethany D'Angelo and
Lois Lane, Lana Lang.
Lois goes airtight.
It's like Orly something.
So that the giant group of mayonnaise white names that you just gave, talking about they were going to go check out some caves in the Philippines, what were they hoping to find? Like gold?
Yes, yeah, that's exactly Jesus. What it's alleged what they found.
Oh, okay.
This is all conspiracy theory. This is not like confirmed like fact.
Okay. So this is
what the
theory out. Okay.
This is what the Seagraves allege, who have written like the most comprehensive work on this, other than like random treasure hunters who get on like Arthur C. Clarke.
Okay.
More than 170 tunnels and caves were found. Ray Kwai believes that both Robert Anderson and Paul Hillowell created 176 quote unquote black gold banking accounts in 42 countries after moving the loot by ship to support future U.S. operations. The stolen property reportedly included many different kinds of valuables that were looted from banks, depositories, and other commercial premises, such as other commercial premises, museums, private homes, and religious buildings. It in turn takes the name of General Yamashita, who assumed command of the Japanese forces in the Philippines in 1944. According to the various accounts, this loot was initially concentrated in Singapore and later transported to the Philippines. The Japanese hoped to ship the treasure from the Philippines to the Japanese home islands after the war ended. As the war in the Pacific progressed,
U.S. Navy submarines ship it during the war. I mean,
and Allied warplanes inflicted increasingly heavy sinkings on Japanese merchant shipping. It was sort of like the thing of when they took over the oil fields in Vietnam in Indochina, and they're just like, it's like, yeah, we finally have oil. And then you have to get that oil back to, you know, Japan.
Give it back.
Some of the ships carrying this loot were sunk in combat. The Seagraves and a few others have claimed that American military intelligence operatives located much of it, and they colluded with Hirohito and other senior Japanese figures to conceal its existence, and they used it as a quote-unquote black gold to finance American covert intelligence operations around the world during the Cold War.
What?
These rumors have inspired treasure hunters, but most experts and Filipino historians say there is no credible evidence behind these claims. In 1992, Imelda Marcos claimed without evidence that Yamashita's gold accounted for the bulk of the wealth of her husband, Ferdinand Marcos.
She say she claimed without evidence? Is that what you said?
Yes.
Okay, so she didn't know, but she went out and said that. She was pretty crazy, well, though, man.
That's wild to say, just like without any evidence.
We you know, the whole reason why I think this myth kind of persists that they were okay with keeping going is that it had been rumored in the Philippines for a long time, and we'll get to a case that the Marcoses had like found it, or other wealthy Filipinos had found it. Like, for instance, the founder of like San Miguel, the like food company that makes the beer. Mm-hmm. It's rumored that like he never got his start from finding the gold.
Is that like a Filipino beer company or?
Yeah. You never seen San Miguel beer?
I literally just
said that. They sell it at like Publix.
Yeah. I've never seen that before.
It's probably one of the ones that you see, but it just doesn't even register because it's just very like bland, nondescript beer.
Yeah, I've never seen that.
But the Marcos, one reason why they would claim this and probably promote these rumors is because they were embezzling massive amounts of money from like the Philippines, like billions of dollars in personal wealth that they had accumulated and put into foreign bank accounts.
I mean, let's be Filipino honest. That sounds the most legitimate right there.
That the Philippines government attempted to and like was actually able to recover a good deal of it because there was no sort of like, you know, now like if there's like a dictator or something, like there's controls in place where they can like seize their wealth. Mm-hmm. And like banks, like that system did not exist in the 80s. So mm-hmm. So when the Marcoses were overthrown and like fled the country, they were able to like keep a lot of their wealth.
Yeah.
And, okay. And it should be noted that their son is currently the president of the Philippines, Bongbong Marcos.
I was going to say, isn't Imelda Marcos the mom of the current president? Okay, all right, you answer that for me.
Many individuals and consortia, both Philippine and foreign, continue to search for treasure sites. It has resulted in a number of accidental deaths, injuries, and financial losses incurred by them. The National Museum of the Philippines is responsible for the issuance of treasure hunting permits and licenses. It's also a lucrative industry of selling permits to go snipe hunting.
Oh, my God.
Jesus Christ.
Ricardo Trota Jose, a history professor from the University of the Philippines, has questioned the theory that treasure from mainland Southeast Asia was transported to the Philippines. Quote unquote, by 1943, the Japanese were no longer in control of the seas. It doesn't make sense to bring in something that valuable here when you know it's going to be lost to the Americans anyway. A more rational thing would have been to send it to Taiwan or China. Because they controlled Taiwan at the time. Mm-hmm. It had been a Japanese colony for about 50 years at that point.
For a minute. Mm-hmm.
Philippines National Historical Institute Chairman and Historian Ambeth Ocampo commented, two of the wealth myths I usually encounter are the Yamashita treasure and gossip that the Kohongo fortune was founded on a bag of money, which is the San Miguel company.
The beer company.
Yeah. They're a food company, but the most notable thing in America is that their beer is sold here. Ocampo also said, for the past 50 years, many people, both Filipinos and foreign, have spent their time, money, and energy in search of Yamashita's elusive treasure. He also noted, what makes me wonder is that for the past 50 years, despite all the treasure hunters, their maps, oral testimony, and sophisticated metal detectors, nobody has found a thing. In May of 1988, a Filipino treasure hunter named Rogelio Roxas filed a lawsuit in the state of Hawaii against the former president of the Philippines, Ferdinand Marcos, and his wife Imelda for theft and human rights abuses.
Interesting.
Roxas claimed that in Baguio, in 1961, he met the son of a former member of the Japanese army who mapped for him the location of the legendary treasure. Roxas claimed a second man who served as Yamashita's interpreter during the war told him of visiting an underground chamber where stores of gold and silver were kept, and told him of a golden Buddha kept at a convent located near the underground chambers. Roxas claimed that within the next few years, he formed a group to search for the treasure and obtained a permit for the purpose from a relative of Ferdinand, Judge Pio Marcos. In 1971, Roxas claimed he and his group uncovered an enclosed chamber on state lands near Baguio, where he found bayonets, samurai swords, radios, and skeletal remains dressed in a Japanese military uniform.
What?
Like, you know, no, that's his claim. He's not like, hey, check out my skeleton. Somehow all the bones are still connected. You know, he's moving it around, raising its arms in the air and saying bonsai.
Oh my god! Oh, it's like some old like racist American grandfather would do. You know. Check this out. Look what I brought home from the war. Fuck.
Well, you know, there's that photo from like Time Magazine of like the woman writing a note back to her like boyfriend or husband who sent her a Japanese soldier's like skull in the mail.
Oh my god. Really?
That's insane. Just like thoughtfully examining it like in the picture as she's like about to like write her letter.
They look just like us. It's so odd. But they can't also found be in the like us. They can't be.
Also found in the chamber, Roxas claimed, were a 3-foot-high, golden-colored Buddha and numerous stacked crates, which filled an area approximately 6 feet by 6 feet by 35 feet.
Well, yeah,
He claimed he opened just one of the boxes and found it packed with gold bullion.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta like contextualize your bullshit, right? Also, just to make it more Japanese, there's a gold Buddha in there.
that's what they always say too about like people who like,
and you know, like Japanese, you know, they're Buddhists, somewhat. Some of them.
It was a golden sushi roll off on the side with a golden bottle of soy sauce.
There's a lot of Japanese Buddhists. Some of them are Shinto, though. Some of them, but this one, he had a big gold Buddha. Jesus Christ.
He said he took the golden Buddha from the chamber, which he estimated to weigh 1,000 kilograms, and one box with 24 gold bars and hid them in his home.
Right.
Yeah.
He claimed.
But what's heavier, 1,000 kilogram gold Buddha or 1,000 kilograms of feathers? Huh?
But which one falls fastest?
You guys ever saw that fucking Lemmy skit? Kilogram of steel or a kilogram of feathers? Well, of course, a kilogram of feathers is lighter. And then it's just the skit is funny because the whole show goes on. Fucking Lemmy show. The whole show goes on. And then throughout the episode, they just keep going back to it. And it's just more people trying to explain to them why they're the same weight. It's over and over again. Oh, so good.
It's almost like the perspective bit from Father Ted.
It's probably very similar.
Yeah.
I guess I don't know if he's getting money from it anymore because I can't really recommend Father Ted for reasons that the Graham Wyndham was the lead writer on it, and he's like an insane person now.
Piece of shit.
Oh, I don't know. I know the name. I don't know what like he did. I just know he's persona non grata.
He's like a professional like transphobe now.
One of those to people.
To the point that his wife, who is transphobic, like divorced him because he was that obsessed with it.
Just H.P. Lovecraft's wife. He had a wife. she just couldn't deal with it.
He's like the guy that the rest of the Nazis looked at and was like, "Yo, man, fucking tone it down a little.
Calm down a little bit, okay? Adolf's in the other room right now. You don't have to keep talking like that."
Yeah.
Oh, you mean that's like how they looked at the Ustanza, the Croatian like fascists. They're like, whoa.
Oh yeah.
Well, guys, I understand that our plan is to annihilate all.
Is that the same thing as the Ustasi?
What are you guys on?
I think it's pronounced Ustanza, but
oh, okay. I don't know.
But they're like the Croatian like fascist government of like yeah. But it said that they were so like genocidal and like so gung ho about it that it like even like that the SS told them like they needed to tone it down.
Why?
Guys, look, you're making us look really bad right now. I need you to tone it back. Just really dangerous.
Now, and now they all live in Canada.
Oh my god. Well,
he claimed he resealed the chamber for safekeeping until he could arrange the removal of the remaining boxes, which he suspected were also filled with gold. He said he sold 7 of the gold bars from the open box and sought potential buyers for the Buddha.
What's this motherless fox name?
Rogelio Roxas. Or Rogelio. R-O-G-E-L-I-O.
Man, that's a fucking
Roxas,
name, bro.
like the character from Kingdom Hearts.
These fucking millennial analogies. Yeah, Roxas, like the character from Kingdom Hearts, and Rogelio, like from season 3 of, you know, Atlanta. Episode 6. That's not in that episode.
Two individuals representing prospective buyers examined and tested the metal in the Buddha, he claims, and reported it was made of solid 20-karat gold.
Hmm.
Okay. All right.
Ayota's gold.
It was soon after this he claimed that President Ferdinand Marcos learned of his discovery and ordered him arrested, beaten, and the Buddha and remaining gold seized.
Hmm.
Roxas alleged that in retaliation to his vocal campaign to reclaim the Buddha and the remainder of the treasure taken from him, Ferdinand continued to have Roxas threatened, beaten, and eventually incarcerated for over a year.
So did Marcos know where, like, everything was that this guy said he found, allegedly, at this point? Or was he trying to, like, beat that information out of him? Like, where is everything? Where'd you get this from?
I'm not sure. It doesn't go into that. I think it's just more that he took what he had, and then he was just like, you need to stop talking about this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or, you know, just like, just do like the bit from The Simpsons, you know, they just sprayed him with rum so no one would believe what he was saying.
Right.
Following his release, Roxas put his claims against Marcos on hold until the Marcoses were overthrown in 1986. But in 1988, Roxas and the Golden Buddha Corporation, which now held the ownership rights to the treasure Roxas claims was stolen from him, filed suit against Ferdinand and his wife in Hawaiian state court, seeking damages for the theft and the surrounding human rights abuses committed against him. Roxas, though, died on the eve of the trial, but prior to his death, he gave the deposition testimony that would later be used as evidence. In 1996, the Roxas Estate and the Golden Buddha Corporation received what was then the largest judgment. Golden Buddha Corporation
sounds like a fucking criminal organization, doesn't it?
It sounds like the place. It sounds like the distribution people for Chinese food restaurants.
We are Flying Dragon.
It was then the largest judgment ever awarded in history, $22 billion, which with interest increased to $40.5 billion.
Okay, again,
that's a lot of shekels,
especially on this show. But these numbers that we talk about don't even fucking mean anything at this point. $40 billion, fucking bro, fuck off. $40 billion, goddamn dollars. Like you're ever gonna see a fucking penny of that money. Number one, and number two, what is the real difference between 22 and 40 billion? And Steve, before you say 18 billion, I get that, but like, functionally, what is the difference between the two?
Not much.
Well, you know, in 1998, the Hawaii Supreme Court held that there was sufficient evidence to support the jury's finding that Roxas found the treasure and that the Marcos converted it. However, the court reversed the damage award, holding that the $22 billion award of damages for the chamber full of gold was too speculative, as there was no evidence of quantity or quality, and ordered a new hearing on the value of the Golden Buddha and 17 bars of gold only.
So they're believing this guy that he had all this stuff.
Yes.
Okay.
After several more years of legal proceedings, the Golden Buddha Corporation obtained a final judgment against Imelda Marcos to the extent of her interest in the Marcos estate in the principal amount of $13,275,848.37. And Roxas's estate obtained a $6 million judgment on the claim for human rights abuse.
Nice. So just under $20 million total.
The jury in the lawsuit ultimately concluded that Roxas found a treasure, and although the Hawaiian state court was not required to determine whether this treasure was the legendary treasure being sought by treasure hunters, the testimony relied upon by the court in reaching its conclusion pointed in that direction. Roxas was allegedly following a map from the side of a Japanese soldier. He allegedly relied on tips provided from Yamashita's interpreter, and Roxas allegedly found samurai swords and skeletons of dead Japanese soldiers in the treasure chamber. All this led to the United States Ninth Circuit Court of Appeal to summarize the allegations leading to Roxas's final judgment as follows. The Yamashita treasure was found by Roxas and stolen from Roxas by Marcos men.
So this dude did find it then, like officially in court records.
Well, that's what the court says, but like the corporation has never been paid, from what I understand, and there's been no other evidence other than what this guy said. So it also could have been, you know, like a fuck you against the Marcoses.
Yeah.
Who became such a cultural point that my father even made a remark about because she famously had a lot of shoes.
Mm-hmm.
My dad said that my grandmother had more shoes than Imelda Marcos.
Oh God, I didn't even realize that this rumor of like stolen gold is like this like Japanese version of Nazi gold is there was a central point in one of the Medal of Honor games, Rising Sun. I didn't even realize that.
In June of 2018, local police arrested 17 people, including 4 Japanese nationals, including a 15-year-old boy and 13 Filipinos, for illegally mining on Kapolei's Island for treasure.
So is that where it's supposed to like all be? Like did Roxas like tell anybody where he found it or like where it was?
I don't think he gave an exact location. It was just sort of like, I found it and then I sealed it up. And then he died before the case was over. So there's no conclusive evidence whether or not he, where he got it or not.
That's insane that he wouldn't write it down. Like, especially if he's going to die, just write it the fuck down so somebody else can get it.
But that is the story of Yamashita's Gold. I think they probably have some like treasure hunter shows about it. I don't know. They have so many of those stupid shows. It was once the mainstay of mid-afternoon Discovery Channel and History Channel specials back when they actually had real content and not just like reality TV shows.
This is the 4:30 p.m. History's Mysteries.
History's Mysteries. Hitler's.
This
hearts
was quite after the. Collected this is quite after Nazi the UFO block.
By Himmler.
Oh yeah. This is easing into the World War II block where they're gonna eventually show just black and white footage of ships at sea shooting each other, overlaid by some dude just talking about Hitler for some
Mysteries,
reason.
Mysteries Mysteries presents Newark, New Jersey. We can't figure out why forcing racial strife via redlining and riots caused so many problems. Mysteries Mysteries.
We may never know. Or figure it out.
We'll ask this local man. I don't understand why they're so mad. It wasn't so long ago.
All right, and with that, good night.
Good luck.
Bye.
Oh man, there's no doubt. Sorry.
Love that.
He just Irish goodbye us.